Ladies and gentlemen, Sunday morning, a little special episode. Football Scoop Podcast is back. I say special, but really, we plan to do this every weekend. Gentlemen, it is great to see you guys. John Bryce is on a plane flying down to Miami. He's covering Notre Dame, Miami this evening. By the way, it's Sunday, and we have college football this evening. Amazing. Virginia Tech, South Carolina today. Notre Dame at Miami this evening. God bless America. Football is back, and yesterday was amazing. Got college football expert Zach Barnett, Doug Samuels. Gentlemen, it's great to see you guys. Why don't we start with the big one that kicked off 11 a.m. Texas, Ohio State, number one, number three, whatever you want to call it. Big boys, Arch is really his debut, Sands debut. Holy smokes, that kid threw dots. Zach, as a resident expert on all things Texas, Ohio State, I'm going to let you take the lead.
I think first things first, you got to give credit to the defending champs. They are very much still the class of the sport and the standard that everyone is chasing. And this is a team that could easily go win another national championship. Not easily, but they're definitely in that top group. Julian Sands, not a whole lot was asked of him, but what was asked of him, he delivered. The 40-yard touchdown to Carnell Tate was the dagger, but I thought the most impressive throw he made of the day was literally in his own end zone with Colin Simmons staring him in the face. He rolls to his right, throws an absolute dot to Carnell Tate to get a huge first down. Ohio State did end up scoring on that drive, but it got them out of their own end zone. And then I thought the X factor of the game was Matt Patricia. He had Texas completely befuddled, 26 passing yards on 10 attempts in the first half. Like they had, Steve Sarkisian said after the game, they were at an elite level in disguising their coverages. So Arch had no idea what he was seeing pre-snap to post-snap, and it showed. So the Texas defense still played really well, but Ohio State didn't ask a whole lot of his offense once it saw how its defense had Texas in a chokehold. And then obviously, I don't think by any means all is lost for Texas moving forward, but you saw that Arch is human, and he's making his first start, his first road pass. All of his passes he'd thrown to this point in his career had been at home. So he wasn't going to walk in and be the best player in college football from moment one. The moment was a little bit too big for him, which I personally didn't expect. He got better as the game went along, but the surprising thing to me was how poor his mechanics were at certain points. That interception that he threw was a terrible pass. And then that last drive when Texas was trying to go tie the game, I think about that third down pass to an open Ryan Wingo that would have been a first down. He's throwing the ball to his right. His hips and his shoulders are pointing straight down the field. And it's like, that really surprised me. That and then the continuing to be befuddled at the goal line. The fourth down sneak, the quarterback sneak from the 1 foot line, I don't think anyone has a problem with that. But once again, in that entire goal-to-goal situation, you don't throw the ball into the end zone one single time. I continue to disagree with that approach. And seeing this offense stuffed at the one-yard line, stuffed in the goal line over and over, and all these big losses is getting pretty tiresome.
I've been dreading this since last night because I knew I had to issue a public apology to Matt Patricia. I mean, I said the verdict was out on him. I wasn't convinced it was a great hire, that NFL coordinators come down and do a great job at the college level. And Matt Patricia did all that and more against the top team in the country, the one of the most hyped quarterbacks of all time. And he put an excellent defensive game plan together that the Buckeyes went out there and executed. They did an outstanding job defensively. And then on the flip side, I was critical of the Brian Hartline hire. He didn't ask his quarterback to do too much. They tried to get Jeremiah Smith some touches. He had some uncharacteristic drops there early in the game, which is not him at all for the best player in college football. They did enough to win the game, but really the story of that game, I think, is Matt Patricia's defense. I think they had Texas on the ropes early. You didn't see Sark's signature motions and shifts and that kind of stuff early in that first half. Early on in the second half, they came out and did a better job. But, yeah, Zach hit the nail on the head. The last series they had that Texas had, and they ran two different variations of mesh. And that first one, arm slot was a little weird and threw a catchable ball behind Wingo, and it would have been a first down. Yeah, on third and five. Then they came back on fourth down and ran a different version of mesh. But Matt Patricia deserves all the credit in the world. Had a great game plan for that game, and I'm excited to see what the Buckeyes continue to do through the next part of the year.
Couple of observations. First on Arch, I guess. Now I want to talk about saying when Arch. One of the things I noticed is when he throws left, especially short left, man, he fires the ball out there. And then on those short crossers, like the Wingo one, man, he puts some pepper on that thing as well. And he was a little behind him. And what do I know? I'm just saying, that dude throws the ball hard right there. On that final fourth down where he went deep into the right back corner of the end zone, that is such a low percentage throw, I would think. I just wonder why that play call. But Ohio State, I mean, coming off the bus, so to speak, those dudes look right. Mickey Marotti just continues to do what he does in the weight room with those young men. They look right. The defense was absolutely on Texas all day long. I was a little annoyed with the broadcast. They never showed you, quote, from the quarterback's eyes, what he's seeing with the coverages, or they never showed you even an all-22 type look. They didn't give the viewer, hey, this is what Arch is seeing. This is why he can't throw the ball anymore, because there is nowhere to throw the ball. Option one, option two, option three are all taken away. I mean, you almost rarely got any sort of analysis of that, which I was disappointed in. Saying on the other side, I was blown away. Every pass, I mean, his first 10 passes hit a dude in the hands. In stride, you know, where it should have been thrown. I just thought that young man is going to be a stud. He's going to be a star, is what I saw. Offensive play calling for Texas, I didn't love. But it was a battle. Having seen Peyton Manning grow up, Peyton had the same kind of stuff. You know, he didn't come out day one and go for 405 touchdowns. You learn, you get better, you learn, you get better, you learn, you get better. And those dudes put in all the work. The Manning kids put in more work than anybody you've ever seen. Arch will be the hardest working guy out there today. He probably went back to practice last night, and he's probably at it again this morning already. They're going to get right. Those two teams just didn't knock Texas out of anything. Texas is going to be in everything.
Yeah, I think the name of the game for this season for Texas is just stay intact into December, put yourself in the tournament. But with that schedule now, that Georgia game becomes kind of a must-win game. You need it, even if you go 10-2, potentially 9-3. If you're 9-3, you need a big skin on the wall. You can't lose your three biggest games at 9-3 and then hope to make the playoffs. So you probably have one more mulligan moving forward against a difficult SEC schedule. But this is a team that, if they get there intact, should be a threat to win the national championship as long as Arch continues to improve throughout the season, which we all expect he will. And then two more thoughts. One, I think Ohio State's the most – by no means a perfect team. I don't expect them to go undefeated. But from what I've seen through week one, the most complete team in college football. I don't see an obvious weakness on their team. And two, I thought your comment on the broadcast was interesting, because I had two different people reach out to me yesterday saying that, God, I just feel like ESPN does a much better job presenting college football games than Fox does, with way more angles for the viewer to see, way more replays. So now you're the third person I'd say put that out there. So I just thought that was interesting as we all get back in the flow of watching all these games each weekend.
It sounds like we need the college football coach roundtable for like these big opening week one games.
That'd be awesome.
That'd be awesome. That would scratch every itch right there.
I did find it humorous watching game day yesterday, how Saban said, you know, when they brought me on set, I thought I was here to be like a ball coach and like, you know, analyze how a coach would attack this game. He's like, no, I figured this is all for entertainment. I just got to be funny up here. That was amazing. Saban is fantastic. And Alabama without Saban is not.
Great segue.
Holy smokes. So Texas OU is over. I'm sorry, Texas Ohio State's over. And I'm like, gotta take a walk or something. I mean, that was intense. I come back and Alabama's already getting dog walked. Like, what happened? Tell me about the first quarter of Alabama, because I didn't see it and I don't want to see it.
To me, when you think of Kalen DeBoer and his, at least his Washington teams are in most recent memory, like they were a finesse team. They threw the ball over the yard. They had receivers that would go up and make plays. And it's that seems to have translated to Alabama. Alabama has gone from being a smash mouth, more physical team. There's clip after clip after clip on Twitter and from the game where Alabama's getting punked. Like they are not the most physical football team on the field. They are right. You got linebackers getting knocked on their tail by running backs leading the way. You've got running backs carrying Alabama defenders into the end zone. Like that stuff didn't happen under Nick Saban. So the DNA of Alabama has changed a little bit. I don't know if the internal expectations and external expectations probably are the same, but the execution on the field has gone from being a physically dominant football team to getting punked by a Florida State team that went 2-10 or whatever last year. But you got to give Mike Norvell credit. Everyone wrote him off as a bad football coach last year. The dude is still an elite football coach. Like he is a great, great football mind that gets his teams ready, and he had a down year last year, but he came out and showed that was a blip on the radar. That's not who he is. That's not who the program is. I was really impressed with Florida State.
Yeah. I don't think you can give enough credit in the world to Tommy Castellanos. I mean, talk that talk that he did in the summer and go out there and back it up. Like, I think every single Alabama defender should have to look him in the eye and call him daddy before they left Doak Campbell Stadium yesterday, because he earned that. Like, he went out there and did the thing. And Gus Malzahn also. I mean, when you give Gus great athletes, you put your eyes in the wrong spot for half a second, and then the ball's going over your head or past you. That running back wheel route after Alabama – I think Alabama just pulled within 17-10, I think, and then they hit a wheel route for like 60 yards right down the field. It's like, okay, Florida State has answers to Alabama. And then there was that moment when Alabama, it was 24-17. You're like, okay, is Alabama – the wheel's starting to turn? Are they going to put Florida State in the blender? And then Florida State's defense shut Alabama out from that moment on and went out and got the score, and the emphatic score of Gavin Sawchuk carrying half the Alabama defense – into the end zone. So it feels like Mike Norvell's probably lived five lifetimes in his five plus seasons at Florida State with all the ups and downs. So you can't help but feel great for him to go out and get that win. And it seemed like the talk in the ACC was it's Miami and Clemson and then everyone else. Florida State, if they did what they did to Alabama, why can't they go compete for the ACC championship and get back in the playoff? Yeah. Long season ahead, obviously, but this is a team that's obviously takes its cues from its quarterback, and they're an extremely confident bunch. And then Alabama, all the stats were floating around yesterday. Kalen DeBoer's already lost more games as a two-touchdown favorite than Nick Saban ever did. Like, the standard for performance, for preparation has clearly dropped, and I don't know how you go about and raise that. And I was listening to Alabama people yesterday sincerely talk about, all right, well, who's our next coach? Because clearly this is not working out. So, seriously, Kalen DeBoer is up against it right now. I don't know what his approval rating is, but it's probably below 25% at this point.
Yeah, it's not good. Castellanos with Boston College, I don't know if you'll remember, I think it was maybe their second game last season, maybe it was their first game, but dude was – not even untackleable. He was unflagged footballable. You couldn't even get his flag. He was that good. And then he just wasn't. And he says he and Bill O'Brien got into it, and it caused a big rift in the team. I don't know what happened, but the guy that played those first couple of games, he was unbelievable, and he was again this time. So the question is, can he do it 12 games or more? Hopefully. And they were fun to watch.
Yeah, with a five. Well, how tall is he? Like 5'9", 5'10", tops. Like he played like, I don't want to put him in like Cam Newton territory, but he played like he was a big boy. Like he toted the rock a bunch. He was getting hard yards, falling forward for 3 yards. Like he
has the lower,
like Zach said,
he has the lower body of a defensive tackle. Like he's not tall by any means, but his lower body is thick with 3 C's. So I think he's clearly prepared his body to go out there and carry the football as many times as his team needs him to. Because this is probably the most money he'll ever make playing football. So he's going to put absolutely everything on the line this season.
One quick note on that game. You mentioned the ESPN broadcast being, you know, somebody said they're both better than Fox. Listening to the ESPN broadcast of that game, Florida State, I presume it was Jesse Palmer. Man, it's like he feels like he has to fill every second until the very next play. I mean, he'd start telling you about the DB's date his senior year in high school to some prom. You're like, dude, I got it. You got notes. I don't care. Like, stop. I don't need to hear all this. Yeah, it's just personal. Moving right along. So LSU, Clemson, big nightcap, you know, top 10 teams, Death Valley. Can Brian Kelly ever win a season opener? That really, there's so many storylines. And we start off and it's kind of a 10-10, you know, 10-3. Touchdown gets taken away. There's a bunch of weirdness. I got a million thoughts. Anybody want to start on that one?
I thought LSU outcoached Clemson in this game. I didn't really like Clemson's offensive game plan. It seemed like they were throwing over the middle to covered receivers more often than not. Like Garrett Riley didn't find a way to get guys open. And so Cade Klubnik was having to either put the ball in a window about this big or he to have a chance at a completion, and maybe he did, and the LSU's defensive backs did a really good job of knocking the ball away, or Cade Klubnik was inaccurate. And every time they seemed like every time Clemson called up a quarterback design run, LSU saw it coming and snuffed it out. And then I'd be really interested to see when the last time the game was LSU threw the ball more than about 2 yards down the field. Like it seemed like Joe Sloan was like, we're going to throw wide receiver screens, tight end screens, and let our quarterback go bring this one home for us. So it was one of those games where LSU, I thought I was really impressed with LSU's defensive game plan and its talent level. It seemed like they'd done a really good job of moving from a B-minus defense to an A-minus defense in my estimation in a tough opening game.
What I saw from LSU's defense was some of the things we talked about before the game. The defensive line looks a lot better and a lot more depth and a lot more speed and length on the defensive line that they simply didn't have the last 2 years. So that's good. The linebackers from LSU now seem to be very much an attacking set of linebackers. They are moving towards the ball all the time. Perkins, you know, finished the game off by almost taking Klubnik out on that last play. Whit Weeks is constantly going to the ball. 33, his brother, is going to the ball. Perkins is just attacking the ball. So that's creating pressure. The defensive backs, I thought, played well. They played better in the second half. The safety who was had to sit the first half because of something he had done at Houston, you know, last season. Halsey, when he came back in, they were better. So the defensive backs were better in the second half, were shut down in the second half. Defense looked good. Offensively, for LSU, I'm a believer that Nuska's – I've seen it. Nussmeier, when he throws the ball deep down the sidelines or ripping a seam, he's really, really, really good. He's also – he's a pro-style quarterback in as much as he can get up to the line and understand the defense and check to the call that he wants. And the defense checks and he calls the other way. So I think he's a professional. He's gonna go pro. He did a very good job of managing the game. I thought that one pass to Brown where he caught it, 1 foot in, second foot hits the pylon, goes into the end zone. I thought it was a touchdown. They ultimately ruled that he didn't control it through the hitting the ground, which I thought was dumb. But whatever. It's amazing when you have the broadcast team and their rules official or their rules expert, or whatever, all saying that's a touchdown. And the game's like, it's not, and moves right along. And you're like, like, well, okay.
I was surprised Nuss didn't have a completion to a receiver until like the waning moments of the first quarter. Like Zach said, he hit his check down a lot, went through his progression and was hitting the back, you know, that's sitting over the center or out in the flat a lot. So to your point, Scott, he's definitely an NFL quarterback. Like he's getting through his progressions. he's at his best when they're taking shots down the field. And I don't think we saw enough of that out of LSU, especially early in the game. But I think part of that is on the flip side of the ball is the game plan on Clemson's defense. So, I mean, you got to credit Tom Allen and taking the quarterback strength away as much as they possibly can. When LSU got that pass rush to Klubnik with like just over 8 minutes left in the third quarter, forced the pick, forced the high throw. Like that's the LSU defense we have expected to see the past, 5 years ago, mm-hmm. 10 years ago, getting pressure on the quarterback. And that number four, I think he's a transfer from Virginia Tech, like a lockdown.
DB played great.
Played awesome. Like the LSU defense seems to have an identity and is moving forward. And then to get pressure on the quarterback on the fourth down as Klubnik rolls out to the right and he's got to make a tough throw on fourth down with pressure in his face. That's the LSU defense is starting to come back. I'm not saying that they're there, but you're starting to see flashes of what made them very great under previous head coaches. Starting to see that was great week one.
I guarantee you Cade Klubnik came to the sidelines and asked his coaches, like, are we sure they don't have 13 guys in the field? Because that's what it feels like. Like, there was everywhere he tried to go, there was a white jersey in a physically superior athlete chasing him down. And if you guys had to guess how many yards Clemson ran for, what would you guess in the game?
It was not a lot, like 30.
32.
Yeah.
32 rushing yards with a long of 7. I know there's a lot of optimism about this Clemson offensive line. They didn't show up. A good Clemson offensive line, they had no running game to show for it. And they put a lid on the Clemson offense for sure. So and what seems to be through week one, a wide open SEC, LSU's absolutely a championship contender.
I was talking to Scott before we started recording. Like I saw all the production that Clemson returned, 85% of their offensive production they returned to go out there and have the type of performance they did week one is like inexcusable. Like
it kind of connects to what we were talking about on Thursday. Like Clemson returns a lot of production, but how do they finish the season? No one thought they were a national championship contender to end the season. They bring back almost all the same guys. Well, they brought back all the same guys, they're national championship contender. Ohio State lost a lot of production. Ohio State also brought back a lot of production and had elite players on their bench. And Ohio State's very much a national championship contender because their players are better than Clemson's players, whether they're returning productions or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 4 from LSU, the DB played extremely well. 29 for Texas. I think they might say it was a true freshman, played really well. Ohio State had 2 dudes in the defensive backfield, which were, they were just rock solid. There's some fun stuff out there. How about the kid? I mean, you'd hear about these transfer kids. They're like 6'6", 270, playing like a defensive end. You're like, geez, where was this guy?
You can see why these GMs and these personnel people earn the money that they do.
Yes. Yeah, because they're changing multiple wins because of finding this one or two dude that can affect the game late. Whew. All right. Those were kind of 3 of the bigger games. I want to run some quick games by you guys, just brief thoughts. I happen to have a multi-view. I had Ole Miss at the same time as LSU. Ole Miss's offense is they just consistently produce – receivers running free and the quarterback hits them darn near every time. Charlie Weiss is he doesn't get the credit he deserves. Charlie Weiss dials up a lot of that stuff and just doing a good job. I didn't see anything in Penn State, Nevada. I don't think anybody needed to. Penn State won by 35.
Is Penn State the number one team in the country, or does Ohio State jump?
Ohio State, absolutely.
There's no way. Ohio State's definitely jumping up there.
Just because of who you scheduled week one. That's what it comes down to.
Well, it's a lot harder to beat Texas than it is to beat Nevada.
I don't disagree. I'm just saying when the AP poll comes out and they just do the easy thing by moving Penn State up a notch and everyone else up a notch. That would be
embarrassing. That would be embarrassing. Georgia handled Marshall big time. Oregon handled moving right along. Arizona State was in a battle with Northern Arizona, to be honest. Arizona State, I saw a comment from Kenny saying, I got to out-coach. You know, I got to do a better job. They still won by about 20.
I mean, I think Arizona State, the story of their season is last year their backs are against the wall. No one expected anything out of them. That's the easiest way to motivate your team. And now trying to stay on the mountain is way harder than trying to climb the mountain.
I saw a little bit of Michigan, New Mexico State. I saw New Mexico State hanging in there a little bit against them, kind of give them a little bit more than they wanted. Michigan looked pretty good, but New Mexico had some dog in them.
Yeah, Bryce Underwood throwing darts all over the field. Like, if he has a downside, it's he hasn't got the maturity to know when to put touch on it. Like, everything's a 90-mile-an-hour fastball. But you can definitely tell the Michigan offense has a little bit of Sherron Moore, but the Chip Lindsey, Steve Cassula, Marriage's coordinator and co-offensive coordinator, they're definitely putting their own staple on things and kind of moving maybe a half step past all the Harbaugh influence. Two really great offensive minds.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear to see why Bryce Underwood was the number one recruit in the country and why Michigan decided, yeah, this kid's a true freshman, but we're still going to roll with him. He's got the arm to make you right when everything else is wrong. It's just, can he harness it and be on time and all that stuff against an experienced defense? We'll see, but it's obvious why Michigan rolled with him. I didn't see a second of the game, but I understand John Mateer had a really good game for Oklahoma against Illinois State.
Yeah.
So, obviously, that'll be the game of the week next week, and which of these quarterbacks can scale up their game against an equivalent defense will be the story of that one.
A couple of other small notes. Tennessee looked real good against Syracuse. Nico did not for UCLA against Utah.
Tennessee and Ole Miss are very similar offenses that if you don't have the athletes, they're just going to run by you and they're going to be able to name their score. But how do they do against similar level athletic defenses? That's the question. But so far, so good. Tennessee's winning the trade.
Agreed. And both those offenses you mentioned, Ole Miss and Tennessee, are very receiver driven in terms of getting open with their choice concepts. And the quarterbacks really got to anticipate and get them the ball. You're not asking them to read a bunch of defenses. The receivers are making the choices. So that was a big advantage for Joey Aguilar there and his opener there with the Vols.
Also, Devin Dampier, Utah's quarterback, has a little – he's not going to be the first pick in the draft, but he reminds me a little bit of Cam Ward, and that is a guy that's extremely confident in himself, seen everything, played a ton of football, and is just out there. His heartbeat's resting like ours is while he's in the middle of a football game. Like, nothing phases him. So I enjoyed that. And then I also saw when Utah gets into like their power set, the running back was at a 3-point stance. And I can't tell you the last I saw that.
That's awesome. That gets me excited. I'm gonna have to go back and watch that now. I didn't see any of Maryland, Florida Atlantic, but apparently Maryland's quarterback, who might be a freshman, played exceedingly well in the first half.
I didn't see any of it, but yes, he is a true freshman.
They put up 33 in the first half, and I mean, it's Florida Atlantic, but hey, Purdue got a shutout. Good for them. Tulane didn't get a shutout, but they beat the dog out of Northwestern.
Don't disrespect New Orleans, as John Sumrall said. Like, if those dudes want to wear their whites for Hurricane Katrina, like, David Braun, make it happen. Obviously, he had some different things on his radar, and they already had plans. But don't disrespect New Orleans.
Sumrall will never pay for a drink in the city of New Orleans again. Kentucky battled and got a win versus Toledo. West Virginia struggled in the first half, but then ran away from Robert Morris, which is a school that plays football. No disrespect intended. Apologize. What else, gentlemen? What else? Iowa got a win. Quarterback didn't look great, I hate to say it.
He didn't look like a college football playoff contending right, exactly. Quarterback.
Agreed. We'll see, JB. We'll see, JB. We love you. Austin Peay beat Middle Tennessee pretty easily, and I don't think anyone was surprised.
No.
Their first win in 20 games over Merrimack. I know Scott tweeted about that a few times. It's a exciting for those guys that haven't gotten a taste in 2 years or whatever it is, over a year.
Rice came into Louisiana Lafayette and beat the Raging Cajuns. It's a nice first win for Rice and a new head coach. That's awesome. Tulsa got their first win under Trey Lamb. Good job, boys. Okay, I saw a little bit of Fresno State, Georgia Southern. I picked that game. Georgia Southern hadn't played yet. Fresno State had. They got handled pretty easily by Kansas. I thought Georgia Southern might go out there and get them. I watched a little bit of that. The speed and the athleticism on Fresno State's offense was stunning to me. So the fact, I mean, they rolled Georgia Southern. They beat them like it was a JV team. The fact that Kansas beat them that badly, I'm like, geez, how good is Kansas?
Some would say last year they're Big 12 title contenders. Man, we're just taking shots at JV over and over.
JV, don't show up, bro. I'm flying for work. Sure, whatever.
Fair game.
But yeah, Georgia Southern now gets to stay in California all week long to try and keep USC under 70 points because USC got there in not his first start, but his first start in a season opener for Jaden Maiava, which I saw was the first Polynesian quarterback to ever start an opener for USC.
Cal handled Oregon State quite well. Cal looks a lot improved. Arizona played Hawaii and handled them by 35. Utah just rolled UCLA. That was enjoyable. And then Colorado State was right there with Washington through halftime. A little talent level and a couple of bad calls, honestly, by Colorado State. Put that game away. But Washington didn't excite me, to be honest, gentlemen.
No, and then Washington State ekes by Idaho 13. Not a pretty game. And Nico, I'm not going to try to say his last name as well as John Bricewood. Saw a video of him walking out of the locker room with a brace on his left hand, I believe. All the UCLA fans were saying right hand, but it's clearly his left hand. So I wonder if he's got the bag and now he's saw the writing on the wall and tapping out. I don't know, but not a good look after getting donkey slapped by a bunch. So
if you're doing that, pulling that move after one game, UCLA should demand a full refund.
Agreed.
I only saw it briefly this morning, and I didn't check authenticity. But there was a video floating around of Ryan Williams, who was 17 last year. I don't know if you're aware, Steve for Alabama. Walking in with a little fake puppy dog. What was that?
I think it was a baby. Like it was I thought it was a fake, like a baby doll on their pregame walk to the stadium.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. If you're Alabama, is you have a million dudes that went through that program over 17 years that won national championships, that made a ton of money in the NFL, that have platforms. And you're going to, if you don't turn it around quickly, each and every one of them is going to take their turn absolutely ripping your coaching staff, ripping your players, your locker room. It's going to be really bad if they can't turn this around just because of how spoiled that fan base is, that program is. And they're all going to get their turns in and getting their fists out to your rib cage. So, yeah.
In a lot of ways, it reminds me of USC with Caleb Williams when they weren't winning and he was painting his nails. Like they found fan bases found anything they could to just nitpick at. And that I can see that absolutely happening. Alabama here moving forward. That's college football.
All right, give me two quick thoughts. South Carolina, Virginia Tech, and Notre Dame, Miami, both of you. Go.
I like South Carolina. I want to see Virginia Tech defenders bouncing off of Lenora Sellers like bowling pins. And I think Miami has the worst team against Notre Dame, but I like them to win the game tonight.
I'm really excited to see two new coordinators for Brent Pry, Sam Cifkus, and Philip Montgomery. I know I talked about earlier this week, but I mean Lenora Sellers is going to be the best player on that field, and it's not even close. So I think South Carolina wins it, but it's one of the games I'm looking forward to watching the most. And then I think Notre Dame is just too talented. Miami, you lose the number one pick. New defensive coordinator breaking in, would not want to break it in against a Notre Dame squad that returns Jeremiah Love. I think Notre Dame, I don't want to say Notre Dame rolls, but I bet it's a I don't know what the spread is. I'd take Notre Dame by 12. That's my Vegas line. Just pulled it right out of my head.
I like it. I think South Carolina wins by 10 or 14 or 17. I think Lenore Sellers is special. I think that South Carolina has the defensive backs to handle what Virginia Tech has on the outside with Philip Montgomery's new offense. So I think the defense does a good job. I think Sellers is the difference, and they win that game. I like Notre Dame in Miami as well. I think Notre Dame's the real deal. I think they're a complete team. I think their offensive line's good. Their defensive line's very good. Defense is always solid. I hate to say, I think you have a step down from Al Golden, who had been – his system had been there for a few years, stepping in, you know, Chris Ash coming in. I think that will be a step down. But C.J. Carr has all the attributes. He hasn't done it yet in the college game. If y'all don't know, he hasn't thrown a pass yet in college. Might have heard that. Anyway, take the over in wins. Go Irish. With that, we're out. JB, have a great time in Miami, and we will see you soon. Football Scoop Podcast is –